Information, please. Time to stump the experts. Each question accepted wins you $2. You can win, therefore, as much as $7 per question, if you're lucky and information pleases not. Our master of ceremonies is Clifton Fadiman, literary critic of the New Yorker magazine. Mr. Fadiman.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. Good evening, everybody. This is a very special night for information, please, because instead of the usual four, we have five experts. Or anyway, we have four experts and Harpo Marx. Harpo has practically built his career on being dumb. And what right he has to be here tonight, I can't tell. I assure you, I don't know what Harpo is going to say or whether he's going to say anything. Harpo Marx will be supported by an all-star cast consisting of Franklin P. Adams, columnist of the New York Post, John Kieran, sports expert and philologist, hi, Phil, Bernard Jaffe, teacher of science and author, and Oscar Levant, musical authority, composer, and baseball fan. Now, gentlemen, the rules. If you know the answer, raise your hand. Put your hand down, Harpo. A question composed of no more than two parts must be answered by one man. If it has more parts than that, the board may cooperate. But if any part is answered wrong, we lose $5. When you hear that cash register ring, that means the questioner is actually getting his $5. Ladies and gentlemen of the radio audience, please remember that Information Please is a spontaneous and completely catch-as-catch-can program. We're off. The first question comes from Woodbury, New Jersey. Mrs. C.H. Waterbury of Woodbury, New Jersey. That sounds like a plan. Wants me to ask each member of the board for a loan of $5. So far, the plot is absolutely improbable. Now, I must be turned down by each of you gentlemen with a typical or appropriate remark. Let's make it $10. Who cares? Now, suppose I asked each of you to lend me $10. What would you reply? Mr. Levant, you have...
I would lend it to you, only it would spoil our friendship.
Oh, come, come. See if I can get four more. Mr. Jaffe.
I never knew there was so much money in the world.
That'll do. That's two. Mr. Kieran.
Quiet, 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 Harpo.
Mr. Kieran.
Neither a borrower nor a lender be.
That's very good. That's very good. Mr. Marks is shaking hands with Mr. Kieran. All right, Harpo. You going to talk? Going to talk?
Oh, I can't give you...
Now, you going to do that for the rest of the evening, Harpo? Don't know anymore? All right, now you keep quiet. That'll do. That's four. Mr. Adams, I have to get one out of you.
No.
All right. Second question from Mr. George Rudolph of New York City. Now, our studio pianist... Well, listen carefully, boys. Our studio pianist is going to play a special arrangement of a medley of popular songs. And you are required to identify the individual selections as well as the song used as the accompaniment throughout, which later emerges as a melody. I hope that's entirely clear. Are you ready, studio pianist? Go ahead. Mr. Levant.
He did that.
I want the names of the songs.
Look for the Silver Lining from Sally.
Look for the Silver Lining from Sally is correct. Can I have another one?
Do the next part right after.
Please.
Mr. Levant?
Cheek to cheek.
Cheek to cheek, yes, from?
Cheek to cheek from... Shake the Top Hat.
Yes, Top Hat. Irving Berlin. That's quite right. That's two. We're doing very well. Let's have a little more.
Waving. No, not the beginning.
Got it now?
Mr.
Levant?
With a song in my heart, which is the accompaniment late at the beginning.
That is correct. Now, let's see if we can get the... there's still another to be named.
The last two bars.
Yeah.
The last four bars of it.
Oh, make it six. We don't care. We have lots of time.
Can't take that away from me.
You don't have to sing it. Sing it. That's quite correct. And with a song in my heart is a recurring theme. Pretty good. The next question from Mr. Joe Hunt, again of this city. Mr. Hunt wants you to mention five books or plays. You know what a book is, Mr. Mark. Name five books or plays whose titles indicate an occupation. Maybe we can get something out of Harpo on this one. Five books or plays whose titles indicate an occupation. Mr. Adam.
Tinker Tailor.
That's quite correct. Who wrote the book?
A.P. Herbert.
Very good, Mr. Adams. Thank you. Mr. Kieran.
American Doctor's Odyssey.
An American Doctor's Odyssey. Who wrote that book?
Dr. Heisey.
That's correct. Oh, there's Harpo again. Harpo, do you know anything? Oh, the farmer. That's right. The farmer takes a wife. That's quite correct. It was a play. Ran a year or two ago. That's three. Mr. Jaffe.
The horse and buggy doctor by Hertzler.
Oh, you're sticking to doctors. All right. That's
I
four.
I need them tonight.
We have to name five altogether. All right, Oscar, Mr. Levant.
The man with a hoe, Edwin Markham.
Not a, he has an occupation? Yes, I suppose it would be
a farmer.
What
do you do
with
a hoe?
Perfectly all right. Can't seem to stick him. Harpo, can I get you to answer? He says no. All right. Harpo, put that banana away.
You're lucky he doesn't eat the microphone.
The next question for Mr. William Stahl of Chicago, Illinois. Finish with that banana. We can't go on to the question, Harpo, until you finish your banana. All right, and keep that orange out, too. Now, the next one. Suppose a man is as lazy as Stepin Fetchit. A man as lazy as Stepin Fetchit and as thirsty as W.C. Fields. And suppose he looks out of a window. And suppose he observes an open barrel of wine 50 feet below. 50 feet. He has available a narrow rubber tube 55 feet long. How should he go about quenching his thirst? This is the darndest situation. Now, is that all clear, Mr. Jaffe?
Well, I imagine he could throw that pipe out, that rubber tube, rather, into the barrel and suck, draw up the wine. That would only go about 34 feet, though.
Yeah, what would he do then? So far, you're all right.
He could walk downstairs.
No, I can't. No elevator. No, I can't.
No elevator.
What's he going to do from that point on? You got to stay where he is. Now, he's got his wine 34 feet up. Fine situation.
Oh, I know. He could hold on to the end of the rubber tube that he has.
Yeah?
Lift the tube up and empty the contents of that pipe into any container that he has.
That would be quite correct. Though it seems to me to be a pretty tough job for him to handle 55 feet of tube and 34 feet of wine in an ordinary small room.
It'd be cheaper for him to dive.
Yeah, much easier. Fifth question from Mr. Dwight Hutchinson of Marblehead, Massachusetts. You have to identify the following five persons or literary characters. Literary, Mr. Marks, literary. One, who lived on a column? Mr. Marks says that Franklin P. Adams. Oh, Mr. Kieran got that one, too. There's still another, Mr. Kieran. Do you know who it was?
Yes. Besides F.P.A., there was St. Simon Stylites.
Yes, that's quite correct. Who lived in a tub? Mr. Adams?
Diogenes.
Are any one of those three gentlemen, Rub, Dub, or a Dub, who lived in a tub, remember them? Three men in a tub? How about the man who lived in a coffin? A coffin. Mr.
I know a very fantastic character in a book that nobody's read, in which there's a man who lives in a coffin called Solal.
Pardon?
Solal, S-O-L-A-L.
Did he live in a coffin?
Yeah, the grandfather. He gouged his eyes and he lived in a...
You've got me. That's perfectly possible.
It's true.
All right. I'm not denying it. There is perhaps a more famous character known to anyone who has been to the films recently who lived in a coffin.
A producer.
Don't know? I'll accept yours, subject to correction.
It's
but
true.
It's Dracula. You stick to that, eh? It's Dracula who lived in the coffin. Well, that's three. Who lived in a gingerbread house? Who lived in a gingerbread house? Mr. Adams?
The witch.
Yes, in what play or novel?
Hansel and Gretel.
In Hansel and Gretel. And who lived in a tree? Who lived in a tree? Mr. Marks. You know? Come on, talk. Tell me. Maybe we can get him to talk finally. Oh, I get it. I Tarzan. Yeah, Tarzan. That's right. Tarzan. No wonder you've never learned to talk, Harper. You do so well without it. Take your hat off. Six. From Mrs. Elspeth Dunn of Hewlett, Long Island. Oh, this is a dandy. Explain why a G-man afflicted with mulierose tendencies. Mulierose, M-U-L-I-E-R-O-S-E, might be tempted to resign if assigned to arrest Anoricomus Moll. Oricomus? A-U-R-I-C-O-M-U-O-U-S. Moll, M-O-L-L. My God, they all know it. Mr. Adams.
His wife might object.
I don't get it. Would you mind explaining? You just guessed at that one, Mr. Adams.
Yes, I guess I'm wrong.
I'm not saying. If you can explain your answer.
How far does the tube go?
Oh, you're still there, are you? If you can explain your answer, Mr. Adams.
I think mulierose would be wifely.
No, just the almost the opposite at times. A man with mulierose tendency is one who is exceedingly fond of ladies. Not necessarily his wife, though at times, yes.
I'm old-fashioned about that.
All right. Mr. Kieran, the new-fashioned Mr. Kieran.
Well, what was that kind of lady you said?
That was no lady. That was an auriculous mall.
Oh, auriculous nothing. An auricomus. A-U-R-I-C-O-M-O-U-S. Mrs. Elspeth Dunn is going to get $5.
That's a blonde.
That's right. And what would it mean?
Well, he's
powerful. Goodness gracious. That's right. In other words, a man with mulierose tendencies is one who's exceedingly fond of ladies, and...
He wouldn't want to arrest a blonde.
I recommend small. Perfectly correct. Yes, that's quite correct. Now, the next question is a musical one. Mr. E. Willard Layton of Brooklyn, New York, wants you to play the principal theme in the indicated movement of the following piano concertos. One, the principal theme from the rondo, or third movement, of the Beethoven G major concerto number 4. Any of you can do that? Can any of you do it? Harpo can't do it, Mr. Levant. Don't be silly. All right, Mr. Levant, go and try it. The principal theme from the rondo or third movement of the Beethoven G major concerto number 4. That right? That's right. Second. Mr. Levant, do you want to try the second without knowing what's going to be? Take a chance, all right. The second theme of the third movement of Rachmaninoff's C minor concerto, number 2.
Everybody knows that.
I don't know it. Harpo doesn't know it. Is that right? Right? Harpo says it's right. Now, I'm going to ask you, Mr. Levant, if you can, or Mr. Kieran, or Mr. Adams, Mr. Jaffe, to play the first theme of the first movement of Liszt's E-flat concerto. You can't play it, Harpo. You can play it? Harpo is going over to the piano. Get together, boys. Get together. Is that right? Well, what's Harpo doing? That's Harpo. I can see that. Get away. And finally, the second theme from the second movement of the Gershwin Concerto in F. Don't tell me you know that too, Harpo. He's going over the piano again. Gonna spoil my program for me, I know it. One of them is right. awfully glad you didn't bring your harp.
But
so far, we haven't thrown
better.
Them for a loss at all. See what we can do now. Oh, a chicken bone. Harpo's brought his dinner with him. No, his supper. The next question from Gertrude Craig Roberts of Overbrook, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Give the source or the author the following quotations about the fair. The fair means the fair sex. 1. Oh, thou art fairer than the evening air, clad in the beauty of 1,000 stars. Who knows that? Mr. Adams, don't you know that?
Shakespeare.
No, that's wrong. Well, that's going to cost us $5 right off the reel, and I'm glad to get them down for a loss of $5. Let's take the next one. Give the, that one, by the way, is from Marlowe's Faustus, Mr. Adams. Remember it?
Not at the moment.
All right. 2. Take her up tenderly, lift her with care, fashioned so slenderly, young and so fair. All right, Mr. Adams, redeem yourself.
Thomas Hood.
Yes, what poem?
Bridge of Sighs.
That's quite correct. And how about this one? Fat, fair, and 40. Fat, fair, and 40. Don't know that. That's a tough one. Thought we'd catch him on that.
Minsky.
No, Mr. Levant, not Minsky.
Sheridan.
Mr. Adams, what'd you say?
Sheridan.
No. No, it comes from a novel called St. Ronan's Well by Sir Walter Scott. Chapter 7, if you must. You knew that, Mr. Kieran.
No, but I've heard of St. Ronan's Well.
Well, that's half the battle.
I've heard of Chapter 7.
See if you can get the next one. A maiden fair to see the pearl of minstrelsy. Mr. Adams?
HMS Pinafore.
That's quite correct. And 5, and last, you're the fairest in the land. You're the fairest in the land. Don't know that, Mr. Kieran, eh?
Yeah, I just heard it.
Not from Harpo, surely. I can't get him to say a word. No?
It's in Snow White.
No, that's wrong. Knew you'd say that. No, it's one of the lines in By Mere Bis du Chien. Harpo knew it all along. We've got that $5 rung up. Going to Miss Roberts at Philadelphia. The next question from C. Hyde of New York City. I'm going to ask you to quote from 4 songs, to quote sentences or phrases mentioning at least 2 colors each, excluding college songs. And excluding there's a rainbow in the sky, Minister Adams. I saw that in your eye. All right, Mr. Levant.
Oh, gray mare.
2 colors. 2 colors.
Brown eyes, why are you blue?
All right. That's 1. Mr. Adams.
The red, white, and blue.
Yes, 3 cheers for the red, white. You know 1, Harpo? Forgot it, eh? That's right. It's on your old gray bonnet with a blue ribbon on it. That's pretty good. We got another one. All right, Harpo, let's have it.
Darling, I'm growing older.
Darling, I'm growing older. Silver threads among... I get it. Silver threads among the gold. That's 4. Mr. Levant?
It's not in the title, but in the lyric. Does that count?
It's all right.
Roses red, violets are blue, sugar sweet, honey,
is that a song?
So are you. By
Isn't
Gershwin.
I thought there's something you're writing an album.
By Gershwin.
Oh, by Gershwin.
Yes,
that's quite
sugar.
Trick. That's 5. Let's have another one for good luck. Mr. Adams. Oh, Harpo. All right, he cedes his place to Mr. Adams.
The Blue and the Gray by Paul Dresser.
Is it a song?
Yes, sir.
All right with me. Is that all right, Harpo? It's a song. Okay.
One lies dead at Appomattox.
Didn't ask you for that. Next question. What one is that? Whistle's fine. Save that for the next question, Harpo. Okay. Next question from Mr. Everett F. Taft of Princeton Junction, New Jersey. I'm going to ask you to name the great man and the scientific principle associated with each of the following. 1, a pea garden. A pea garden. Name the scientific man and principle associated with a pea garden. Mr. Jaffe?
The principle is the principle of genetics, heredity.
Yes.
And I know the man's name. Let's see. He was the abbot of Brunn.
Yes. How about his name?
Let's see if I can get his name now.
You're all right so far.
I'll think of it as we go along.
All right. How about trying the next one? and name the great man and scientific principle associated with a right-angled triangle. With a right-angled triangle. Mr. Kieran?
Yes, it was an Italian who was working on the theory of the pendulum.
A right-angled triangle. No, I'm afraid I'll have to call you wrong on that one, Mr. Kieran. A rarity for me and a great pleasure, I assure you. No, the answer is Pythagoras, who in the 6th century proved that the square of the hypotenuse, you remember, is equal to the sum of the squares of the arms. High school students have been worried about that eternal triangle ever since. How about the Leaning Tower of Pisa? The Leaning... Mr. Jeff.
Galileo.
Galileo, yes. And what's the principle involved?
The principle he proved was that objects fall at the same rate of speed no matter what their weights happen to be. That
yes.
is, a feather and a cannonball will fall at the same rate.
Quite correct. I never believed it, but I know it's true. It's in the book. Mm-hmm. And for a milkmaid. A milkmaid. Mr. Jaffe.
Well, you might speak of Dr. Jenner, or Jenner.
Yes.
And,
make up your mind.
Smallpox.
Yes. How did he happen to...
Well, he noticed that milkmaids never contracted the smallpox, but they did contract certain warts on their hands.
Yes, from handling
from
cows. That's
from
right.
handling cows, yes.
That's correct.
The principle of vaccination, of course, is a principle involved.
Derived from that. That's
yes.
quite correct. Now, do you remember who the man was involved in the principle of genetics?
Oh, I know him as well as my name. I just can't think of him. Just
what's
Jaffe.
Your name?
Mr.
Kieran.
Well, isn't that the Mendelian
That's
theory?
Right, Mendel.
Yeah. Gregor Mendel. Well, we got three out of four. That's going to cost us $5. The next question from Mr. A. Solomon of New York City. You're asked to name a musical composition dealing with each of the following objects. I guess you'd call them objects. One, the bee. A bee. Mr. Levan.
Rimsky-Korsakov, The Flight of the Bumblebee.
Yes. And didn't Bach write something about a bee?
No, Schubert did. I don't know if Bach did or not.
Wasn't there a mass in B minor?
Well, oh, I'm sorry.
All right, the flea. The flea. Didn't like that one, eh? All right, Mr. Levant, the flea.
Mussorgsky. Shalyapin made that song quite
yes.
his own and famous.
Yes, Song of the Flea. That's correct. Three, a roach. A roach. A roach. Harper, you don't want to whistle again, do you? Oh, now I get it. That's right. La Cucaracha. That's correct. The famous Mexican folk song, La Cucaracha, is about a roach. Four, a bat. A bat. Oh, Harpo, he knows everything. Don't know that one? Mr. Adams.
The Fledermaus.
Yes, Fledermaus by whom?
Strauss.
That's quite correct. Harpo, do you have another? I don't get that.
Take me out to the ball
oh,
game.
Yes. Oh, that time. I see. Harpo, if I could only get you to say Casey at the bat. Five, a cuckoo. A cuckoo. Mr. Levant.
I don't know how to pronounce it. D-A-Q-U-I-N.
Dakin. That'll
Thank
do.
You. Thank you, Hank.
That's all right, Oscar. And how about the name of the song that Dakin wrote about the cuckoo?
The cuckoo.
Correct. 5 out of 5. Next question. This comes from Miss Eleanor Fitzgerald of Gorham, New York. What methods were used in bringing up each of the following children? What methods were used in bringing up each of the following children? The children of the old woman who lived in a shoe. What methods used? Mr. Adams.
She spanked them roundly and put them to bed.
Soundly, not roundly. That'll do. Two, the baby who changed into a pig from Alice in Wonderland. Baby who changed into a pig. Don't know that one? Don't know that one, eh? Remember, Mr. Adams, you're the Alice in Wonderland expert. Remember, speak harshly to your little boy and beat him when he sneezes? Mm-hmm. That was the method used in bringing up the baby who changed into a pig in Alice in Wonderland. That's one wrong. Three. The elephant's child in the Kipling story of that name. The elephant's child in the Kipling story of that name. You know that. I'll have to give it to you. His aunt, the ostrich, and his uncle, the giraffe, and his aunt, the hippopotamus, and his uncle, the baboon, and his father and mother spanked him. They all spanked him for his satiable curiosity. It's from Just So Stories by Kipling. Not so good on children, gentlemen. Very well. What methods were used in bringing up Pip, the hero of Dickens's novel Great Expectations? Very simple method. Is brought up by hand. Brought up by hand by his foster parents, the Gargeries. And finally, how was Topsy in Uncle Tom's Cabin brought up? Mr. Kieran?
She just grows.
Yes, that's right. Well, we got 3 wrong out of 5 on that. $5. Goes to Miss Eleanor Fitzgerald of Durham, New York. How about this one? This is from Harriet R. Platt of East Orange, New Jersey. Mention 5 cruelties that occur daily in the kitchen. For example, beating the eggs. Get it? Pretty clever, eh? Mr. Adams.
Whipping the cream.
Whipping the cream is 1. Mr. Levant.
My sentimental. Tearing a herring.
Tearing a herring will do. I'll let that one go. Mr. Jaffe. Mr. Jaffe.
Deviling an egg.
Deviling an egg. Yes, that might be cruelty.
Yes, deviling.
Correct. 3. Bedeviling would be even better. Mr. Levant.
This is precious now. Pressing a duck. You know, duck press.
Yes, but I don't think that pressing is necessarily cruel. Sometimes just the opposite, as a matter of fact. I won't accept that one. That's 3 so far, Mr. Kieran.
Mashing potatoes.
Mashing potatoes. Yes, that's 4. Have to get 1 more. 1 more. Oh, I can think of lots of them. Harpo, can I get 1 out of you? What? Taking the eyes out of potatoes. Oh, yes, taking the eyes out of potatoes. I get it. 5 will do, that's right. And sometimes, in badly regulated kitchens, perhaps, killing the odor would do, yes. Well, that's 5 out of 5. Now, the next one comes all the way from Rochester, New York, from Alexander J. Twizdowski. This is a tough one. A witness testified that as he entered the unlit corridor of the building during late twilight, he noted that the defendant wore a red hat, but he was unable to distinguish the color of her coat, which was known to be blue. Why would you disbelieve the witness's testimony? I'm completely lost by this time. Mr. Kieran, have you followed me?
Well, that probably has to do with the visibility of the comparative visibility of red and blue at that time of day in the setting rays of the sun. And
yes, which,
evidently, the man who said that he distinguished something red and could not distinguish something blue was lying, because it would be easier to distinguish blue in that light than red.
That's perfectly correct.
Oh,
how
I guessed
that
beautifully.
Did you know that all along? That's pretty good. Mr. Jaffe, do you know the scientific principle involved there?
Yes.
I mean, do you know what it's called?
Well,
who discovered
reflection
it?
And reflection and absorption of light. The only light in twilight is a blue light, and that's the only light that will be reflected from an object, and therefore all he could see was a blue object. He couldn't see the red. The red would appear as black.
Well, it would disappear. The visibility would disappear more quickly in fading light. Do you know what that effect is called and who discovered it?
Colorblind.
No. I see what you mean. It was a man named Purkinje. Ever hear of Purkinje?
Never heard of him.
Wrote a song at twilight.
I'm afraid that's all we'll have time for tonight, gentlemen and Mr. Marks. Information, please. Seems to have lost how much? $15. Next Tuesday evening, the board of experts is going to consist of Mr. Adams again, Mr. Kieran again, Mr. Mark Duffield of the New York Herald Tribune, and as our guest of honor, Mr. Oswald Jacoby, who is the number 1 ranking bridge expert in the United States for the last 4 years, as I understand it. And now, Mr. Cross, will you take the mic and remind our audience of the rules once more? Information, please, thanks you and asks you to come again.
Thank you, Mr. Fadiman. We meet again next week at 8:30 for another battle of the public versus the experts. Please send us questions, any number of them, with the correct answers. And don't get worried if our editorial staff changes or edits your question slightly. Remember, $2 per question if we use it, and an additional 5 spot if the board flops on it. All questions become the property of Information, Please. Send them to Information, Please, NBC, Radio City, New York. Until next Tuesday evening at 8:30... Good night, all. This is the National Broadcasting Company, RCA Building, Radio City, New York.